Hi, this is Chris McGregor. The work of Discerning Hearts really could not continue without your prayers and support. Between now and December 31st, please consider making a year-end tax-deductible gift to Discerning Hearts. We are a 501c3 not-for-profit organization. Click the donate button on discerninghearts.com or inside the Discerning Hearts free app. Your generous support will allow us to continue producing the type of spiritual formation programming you have come to expect from us, like those from Father Timothy Gallagher, Dr. Anthony Lillis, Monsignor John Esseff, and so many more. Please prayerfully consider supporting our mission, which is dedicated to those on the spiritual journey. Thank you, and God bless from all of us at Discerning Hearts. DiscerningHearts.com presents St. Thérèse and Marie, the story of two cousins with Father Timothy Gallagher. Father Gallagher is a member of the Oblates of the Virgin Mary, a religious community dedicated to retreats and spiritual formation, according to the spiritual exercises of St. Ignatius of Loyola. Father Gallagher is featured on several series on the EWTN television network, including Living the Discerning Life. He's the author of numerous books on the teachings of St. Ignatius of Loyola, as well as on the teachings of Venerable Bruno Lanteri, founder of the Oblates of the Virgin Mary. St. Thérèse and Marie, the story of two cousins with Father Timothy Gallagher. I'm your host, Chris McGregor. Welcome, Father Gallagher.
Thank you, as always, Chris.
In our last conversation, we approached the suffering of St. Thérèse. Yeah, I suppose we could call it almost the passion of St. Thérèse, couldn't we? Because she had really endured a great amount of suffering, some that I never even appreciated before you described what she endured.
Actually, that's the very title of the best book written on this by Bishop Guy Gaucher, whom I've quoted a number of times. And his book on this is called The Passion of Thérèse. Just excellent reading on these final months of Thérèse, which are really so central to everything. This is the peak of everything. This is where she lives her little way to the deepest, or her offering of herself as a victim to merciful love, and all the many aspects, the accepting of suffering for the sake of saving souls and so forth. They all come to their high point in these months. And we're blessed that in these months, as we've said before, because Marie's parents were away, first on vacation and then later for Isidore's health, we have a series. There are actually 19 of these letters that Marie writes to keep her parents informed on Thérèse's condition. And we're in the midst of quoting from these letters now. So let's move to the one that she writes to her parents on July 10th. And I'm only going to read a part of this. It just illustrates something that is almost inconceivable. And that is, in the extremity of terrible physical suffering day after day, how Thérèse responds to this. Not only with, it's a struggle for her, but she will not give up in her struggle to accept what God is permitting, but then with humor. And that's the astounding thing. So she writes on July 10th, Marie writes to her parents, "Our little patient is always in the same condition. There is constant anxiety about her state, and I believe that without some accident, she could go on for a few more weeks." So they don't expect her to go on much longer. In point of fact, she'll go on another 2.5 months. But then Marie goes on to say, after she's described in some detail Thérèse's symptoms, and this is a point in July where her sufferings are extreme. She's coughing up blood repeatedly every day and all the symptoms that go with this. "With regard to her morale, it's always the same. She is gaiety itself, making all those who come near her laugh, talking joyfully about the thief God." Thief is the word that she uses, if the owner knew when the thief was coming, biblically, "who is coming to get her very soon. Oh, she's not to be pitied, this little sister of ours. She'll be so happy. She's so well prepared." And that's the image that most of the sisters saw of Thérèse during these months. Now, think of a patient who is undergoing months of great physical suffering, and in the course of it is not only sinking into discouragement and depression and so forth, but is bearing up with it in such a way that those around her don't even have any sense that she's really suffering. And you see that in Marie's letter here. She has the sense that Thérèse is doing very well in the midst of this. This is where you get these insights into what something like the little way really means. And that is to love, even in the extremity of suffering in this way. I've said many times, and it always strikes me in Thérèse, how profoundly other-centered she is. What she's concerned about as she relates to the community and those who are caring for her is what they're experiencing and how she can lighten this as best possible for them. I think you almost want to just stop and think about that for a moment, because what if we could live even a little bit that way? I want to back up a little bit on this point of showing herself joyful even in the midst of such great physical pain and prolonged physical pain. And this is something that she would say, it's about 2 months later, we're into September at this point. She'll die on September 30th. This is September 6th. And she says to Pauline, Mother Agnes of Jesus, her religious name, who had permission from the superior to be with Thérèse whenever the community was away for the chanting of the office and the celebration of Mass. Now that's about 4.5 hours of the day. So that Pauline is the one who spent the most time with Thérèse in these months. And she wrote down day by day, as I think we've said, the various things that Thérèse did and said in these months. And she records this, that on September 6th, Thérèse says to her, "Whenever I can, I do my very best to be cheerful in order to please you." So whenever I can, and it's not easy for her when she's in such great physical suffering, "I do not only my best, but the very best I can do to be cheerful in order to please you." This word pleasing, another I'm sure we've commented on before, but it's a profound thread in Thérèse. Her deepest aim is to please Jesus, to give joy to his heart, to win souls for him, or to console him, as she'll say often in her writings. And it's the same as regards those she lives with. Her desire is to make things warm and welcome and easy for them as best she's able. Earlier, she had said this to Sister Marie of the Angels, who was her novice mistress. "When I suffer something..." All right, so when we're suffering something, how do we respond? "When I'm suffering something, instead of looking sad, I smile." She does everything she can to have just the opposite response to this. "When I suffer something, instead of looking sad, I smile. In the beginning, I did not always succeed, but now it is a habit I am happy to have, acquired. And it's the years, so we're in her eighth year here in religious life. It's the years of the effort to respond to sorrow in this way. "Oh, when I'm suffering, I try not to look sad. I try to smile and look cheerful for the sake of others." And you see her exercise this in a way that at least I find unfathomable, that she was able to do this. You know, you can't get close to Thérèse without, as I've said other times, without touching the heroic. And not only touching the heroic, but feeling a desire to live something of that ourselves as best we're able. And then more in detail, this is her sister Celine who describes this. And this is years later, looking back on this time. "To the end of her life, Thérèse retained those childlike and charming mannerisms which made her company so pleasant and attractive. It's the one thing that you don't get in the photos, because they had to be stationary for 9 seconds. But habitually, she smiled. And it was a smile that was just attractive for everyone. It was a beautiful thing. Now look at this. She's ill month after month in the infirmary. Her life is waning away in pain. All the nuns wanted to visit her in the infirmary. Her lovable cheerfulness seemed to take on a new dimension as her suffering increased." And that's what we're saying, that it's in these months that you really touch the depths of Thérèse. You enter into them, but you never exhaust them. But it's in these months that you really see Thérèse in the supreme living of her spiritual life. While it was only another manifestation of her fortitude of soul, it was also the effect of her exquisite charity. She sought in this way to lighten our poignant sorrow as we thought of the impending separation. And she'd see this in her sisters as they, Celine was the infirmarian, obviously spending time with her, Pauline there, Marie when she would visit and so forth. And she knew just the great suffering, and her whole effort is to lighten that suffering for them as best she can. And that's what Marie is relating to her parents here in this letter.
In the relationship with her sisters, her familial sisters, Pauline, Marie, and Celine, she was close to Celine when they were children, but she was absent from being with her for how many years since the time Thérèse joined the convent and then Celine?
Celine joins 6 years after Thérèse.
Okay, so that's kind of a period of distance, even though I'm sure they were able to rekindle some things when other relationship when she entered. But was there one of the sisters where she was particularly close or may have grown closer once she entered the Carmel, whether it's Pauline or Marie?
Yeah, that's a great question. It's something that Thérèse understood from the day she entered when she was 15, that if she allowed it, she would become again the sister who was mothered by her two previous mothers, first Pauline and then Marie, who functioned as mother for her after the death of Zélie. And she sensed that they assumed to some degree that the relationship would simply pick up essentially where it had been. And it was very hard for Thérèse and painful for her sisters when they realized that Thérèse was not going to allow that, that she did not come into the Carmel in order to find her family. She was here as a religious. And so, for example, you have these scenarios when they gather in the recreation. So this is the hour when they're all together freely talking after the two main meals. And they would have expected Thérèse to find ways to sit next to them so they could converse and so on. And she consciously didn't do that. And it was very hard for her, and it was painful for them. And things change in these last months because the time comes, and by the time we get to the final illness, Thérèse has resisted so with such courage. And over the years, the, as it were, giving in to familial relationships in religious life in that way, that it's no longer a struggle for her. And you can see her in the final months, and she'll say this, there's the now, which is very powerful. Now it's not, now she can just be very natural with them and very loving because it's no longer a struggle for her. Things are a little different with Celine because there's a long period. It's those years when their father is ill and up until his death, which is 1894. And then Celine will enter just a few weeks after the death of their father. But in the meantime, 6 years have gone by. And when Celine enters, it's not easy for her because she has gotten used to living in a more, let's say, secular environment. And the Guérin family, they enjoyed life. They had parties and excursions and things of this sort. And she had also been the leader in taking care of their father over those years. And she was a strong personality and very talented in many ways. And she too enters the Carmel. And this is something Thérèse has longed for, although here too. Not for the reason that Celine might have expected, because they could renew again that close sisterly intimacy. But she wanted it for Celine's sake, convinced that God was calling her and that this is where Celine would best respond to the Lord. When Celine enters, she finds that things are very, very different from the way they were before. These are the years in which Thérèse is growing by leaps and bounds. And she's becoming, in quotes, the greatest saint of modern times and a doctor of the church. And Celine, by contrast, just sees her own limitations and her imperfections, and it's very painful for her. And it's complicated further by the fact that Thérèse is her, she's an assistant, but she is her assistant novice mistress. charged with the formation of Céline. And we've talked about this in other circumstances, how Thérèse would not let the faults of the novices go by in silence, and she would find ways to, because her deep desire, even though she knew it would not be easy for the novices at times, was to help them make progress on the way toward holiness. So all of this comes together, and the two of them find that the relationship is difficult. It's difficult for Thérèse in ways that she didn't foresee, and difficult for Céline in the ways that we've said. In fact, it would take some time before Céline would finally open to Thérèse's spiritual teaching, like the Little Way and so on along the way. There's a biography of Céline written by Father Stéphane Joseph Piat where you can see this and you can watch this develop. So there's an awful lot there. It's not an easy thing to enter into the tightly closed, tightly knit world of a contemplative community where there's no outside contact and there are 25 of you constantly living together when there are four sisters there and then you add a cousin. It was not an easy thing for anyone to negotiate. One final thing I'll say on this is that when Thérèse entered the Carmel, there were a lot of tensions and divisions and struggles in the community. It was a poor community. It was not situated in a very healthy place. It was kind of low-lying. There was a small stream nearby. It was damp. And it struck me recently, I was actually spent some days on retreat in a contemplative, it was Benedictine Sisters community. And they had a large piece of land. This was out, you know, out in the, actually the foothills of the Rockies. And so they had about 6 miles long, maybe 2 miles wide. They had a full farm with livestock and various industries and so forth by which they supported themselves. The Carmel in Lisieux had none of that. It just had its little enclosure, and they struggled financially. So you put all of that together and the various tensions and so forth, it was a difficult place. And you get some echoes of that in Thérèse's description of her relation with this sister or that sister, some of whom were not easy to live with. That dramatically changed after Thérèse's death, and for two reasons. One was the formation that Thérèse gave the five novices, whose mistress she was, and the impact that that had. Marie was one of them who would benefit from that, Céline another, and there were three others. Something began to change. Thérèse's efforts with the novices were not without fruit. And then, of course, when her Story of a Soul was published, it attracted great numbers of really high-caliber vocations, so that within a generation, it was a completely new monastery. And this was the effect of this formation that Thérèse gave. But in the moment itself, as she gave it, negotiating these relationships, family, novice mistress, and so forth, of course, was not always easy for her.
We'll return to St. Thérèse and Marie, the story of two cousins, with Father Timothy Gallagher in just a moment. Did you know that Discerning Hearts has a free app where you can find all your favorite Discerning Hearts programming? Father Timothy Gallagher, Dr. Anthony Lillis, Monsignor John Assaf, Deacon James Keating, Father Donald Haggerty, Mike Aquilina, Dr. Matthew Bunsen, and so many more. They're all available on the free Discerning Hearts app. Over 3,000 spiritual formation programs and prayers, all available to you with no hidden fees or subscriptions. Did you also know that you can listen to Discerning Hearts programming wherever you download your favorite podcasts, like Apple Podcasts, Google Play, iHeartRadio, Spotify, even on Audible, as well as numerous other worldwide podcast streaming platforms? And did you know that Discerning Hearts also has a YouTube channel? Be sure to check out all these different places where you can find Discerning Hearts Catholic Podcasts, dedicated to those on the spiritual journey.
Discerning Hearts provides content dedicated to those on the spiritual journey. To continue production of these videos, prayers, and more, go to discerninghearts.com and click the donate link found there or inside the free Discerning Hearts app to make your donation. Thanks, and God bless.
We now return to St. Thérèse and Marie, the story of two cousins with Father Timothy Gallagher. Can we add just as a quick footnote, too, for listeners who may be wondering about her relationship with Leonie? She continued that, and didn't she, in the form of letters. And it was a great encouragement for Leonie in those years before she would enter to the visitations.
Yeah, that continued via letter. And then when Leonie, twice during this time, was obliged to leave the visitation, and she just couldn't live the religious life, it was too much for her. And then she'd be home in Lisieux during those times, and she would visit in the speak room. So that relationship continued. That'll get ahead of our story, but these relationships don't end with Thérèse's death. In the communion of saints, they're very, very alive in the heart of the family members. All right, this next letter is 2 days later, and this is July 12th. Marie writes in part to her parents, "Don't think that she, Thérèse, is suffering very much. She suffers only from weakness, exhaustion, several bearable pains in the side, some heartaches. But all that doesn't make her suffer as much as you think." You'll always get this in Marie. And later on in her own illness, she'll write in the same way to her parents. Things are a little better in this way, and that's actually quite admirable when her own time will come. But she describes this, and in part, I think it's because Thérèse showed herself so cheerful. As we've said earlier, you couldn't see from her face that she was in so terribly ill. So things just didn't seem so bad as they viewed her. "Last night she slept a good sleep of 6 hours. You see, my dear little father, she's much improved. That, it's true, can change from day to day." And then this, something that she now shares with Marie. And I'd like to say to every one of us as we go through this, Marie, as we've said, she's everyone. She loves the Lord. She's given her life to say yes to the Lord. She has her human limitations and weaknesses and struggles. And that's every one of us. "Ah, what a beautiful little soul she is, and how, in fact, I have thanked God for making me to know her. She can no longer give us her counsel, so with this kind of illness, she's now in the infirmary, and she'll stay there until her death. Her duties with the novices at this point have ceased, so they can't meet with her regularly, etc., the way they were used to. She can no longer give us her counsel, but what remains with us and will always remain with us is her example." And then she writes this, "There is something, dear Father, which has afforded me much happiness. It's something she said to me a few days before I had received the veil." And that was on June 2nd, so it was maybe 5 weeks earlier. And just before that, Thérèse says this to Marie. "I regard it as her will and testament to me. It was the last time I had seen her and was able to speak to her about my spiritual life before that ceremony, the last meeting she had. There was at this time no question of her death. In fact, in June, nobody foresaw this, but it would come early June, June 2nd, but within days they would begin to realize how serious this was. There was at this time no question of her death. Her condition was not yet known. She said to me all of a sudden, looking at me with such a profound gaze that I'll never forget it, 'Oh, little sister, promise me you'll become a saint, a great saint.' When I looked at her in amazement, she continued, 'Yes, and if I say this to you, it's because I find in you all that is necessary for this.'" So maybe we could let the Lord say that to us. "Yes, and if I say this to you, become a saint, it's because I find in you all that is necessary for this. And if you don't become one, believe me, you'll be unfaithful to grace. Oh, I beg you, become a saint. God is begging this from you. When I'm no longer on earth, you'll have to be a saint for two, in order that God..." Excuse me. And this is another striking thing. Imagine Marie hearing this. "When I'm no longer on earth, you'll have to be a saint for two, in order that God lose nothing. I feel that your soul is being called to the same type of perfection as my own, and you must replace me when I'm gone. I cannot express, dear little father, what these words engraved on my heart. Yes, it was really her last will and testament to me, and from that day onward, I never doubted she was near her entrance into heaven. In one of her later letters, Marie will say this: how can I not do my best to become a saint when I live in a family of saints? This is now 4 days later, and this is a letter of Therese to her aunt and uncle, Isidore and Celine. And it's her goodbye letter, her farewell letter, in a way. It's the last letter that she will write to them. And I'm not going to go through all of this, but just one piece from this letter, which involves Marie. I would like, dear relatives, to speak to you in detail of my Holy Communion this morning, which you made so touching, or rather so triumphant, by your bundles of flowers. So the Guérins were constantly sending things for Therese. They would send foods that otherwise she wouldn't be able to get, that they hoped would be good for her. Of course, financially, they were helping the monastery. And in this case, they've sent her flowers. And the flowers create a beautiful tone for her reception of communion. What reception of communion for her means at this point is she's in the infirmary, and the priest comes, and the entire community would come with him. And there was a fairly extensive ceremony in those days for the reception of communion outside of Mass. And this will be one reason why a time will come in August when Therese is simply unable to physically bear this anymore, just the whole strain of this. And so a point will come when she's unable to receive communion, both for this reason, because it's too demanding, but also because she fears she's not going to be able to keep it down, and she just doesn't want to take that risk. But this is in July, and she's still receiving communion. I am allowing dear little Marie of the Eucharist, that's Marie, to tell you all the details. She knows that Marie will write to her parents or in the visit, in this case, write actually, and share the details of it. And I want only to tell you that she sang before communion a little couplet that I had composed for this morning. So she has just, this is another remarkable thing, that in such extremity, she continues to write letters at great physical cost to herself. I think sometimes whenever we feel that I'm really being pushed to my physical limits, but here is a person who really needs me in some way, then Therese is the model for this, because she gives of herself to the utmost of her strength, to the last bits of it. For example, in writing the third part of The Story of a Soul, which she's already had to give that up at this point. She's too weak to be able to continue that. But she writes, the last part of it is written in pencil and in a shaky hand. You can see she's just pushing herself to the utmost of her energies to respond to the request from the superior that she write. And here she's written a poem in these circumstances for one of the novices, Sister Marie of the Trinity, which would be a whole other lovely story, actually, that relationship. And Marie sings this poem that she's composed. So there's the community gathered, Therese waiting, the priest with the Blessed Sacrament, and Marie sings this poem. And not only that, when Jesus was in my heart, so now Therese has received communion, she sang this couplet from Vivre d'Amour, that we've talked about, this Living on Love, which is probably the best known of her poems. And she's talking as she goes through the verses of this. So the first 13 verses, she says, living out of love means this, and living out of love means doing this, and living out of love means this, and so forth. And then toward the end of the poem, so this is the 14th of 15 verses, she speaks of her desire not only to live out of love, but to die out of love as well. And Marie sings this verse from that poem, and we'll have it here in the English translation. Dying of love is a truly sweet martyrdom, and that is the one I wish to suffer. O cherubim, tune your lyre, for I sense my exile is about to end. Flame of love, consume me unceasingly. That's exactly what's happening here. She is being literally consumed, as the tuberculosis consumes first the right lung and then attacks the left. Life of an instant, that's our life in this world. Life of an instant, your burden is so heavy to me. Divine Jesus, make my dream come true, to die of love. And Marie sings this verse for her after she receives communion. And Thérèse goes on to say to her aunt and uncle, I cannot express to you how high and beautiful her voice was. She had promised me not to cry in order to please me, and my hopes were surpassed. So she didn't cry as she sang. Good Jesus must have heard and understood perfectly what I expect from him, and it was exactly what I wanted. I'd say note again how completely other-centered this letter is. There's no dwelling on her own physical pains and sufferings, but she knows that her aunt and uncle will love hearing this, and so she writes this for them. And then 4 days later, her aunt replies, and again, I'm only going to read 2 sentences from her reply. Well, I'll read the first sentence. My beloved little Thérèse, we are still fragrant from the perfume of your nice letter, of which we just quoted a little bit. And then regarding Marie and singing for her communion, it really touched me to see that my little Marie had sung at the moment when good Jesus came to visit you. Poor darling, she must have had to receive a great grace for her voice not to betray the emotion of her heart.
We'll continue our conversation with Father Gallagher in our next episode. You've been listening to St. Thérèse and Marie, the story of two cousins, with Father Timothy Gallagher. Be sure to check out the comprehensive summary and reflection questions contained in the show notes for this episode. To download this particular episode, along with hundreds of other spiritual formation programs, visit discerninghearts.com, or you can find them within the free Discerning Hearts app or wherever you download your favorite podcasts. This has been a production of Discerning Hearts. I'm your host, Chris McGregor. We hope that if this has been helpful for you, that you will first pray for our mission, which is to offer authentic and rock-solid spiritual formation freely to souls around the world. And if you feel us worthy, please consider a charitable donation, which is fully tax-deductible, to help support our efforts. But most of all, we hope that you will tell a friend about discerninghearts.com and join us next time for St. Thérèse and Marie, the story of two cousins, with Father Timothy Gallagher.